Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 49 of Nerd Pride Radio. 49, obviously, is 7 squared, and 49 is cool just for that fact alone. But also, 49 is the only number to have its own professional American football team. Niners! So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like a freshly minted brick of gold-pressed platinum. Oh, all right, but I got nothing to waste your time on. We're going to get straight to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on the master list, Roku! Okay, apparently Roku drives the guinea pigs crazy. Give me just a second. Okay, I'm back. Did you guys hear them? Could you hear them? They were crazy. Apparently Roku drives guinea pigs nuts. So, on my Roku, this last week, I have been watching, I've been watching Orphan Black. Orphan Black is available on Amazon Prime. And for those of you who have watched it already, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I love this show. I just finished episode 3. I'm watching about one episode a night, and if you're not familiar with it, the basic premise of Orphan Black is we've got our female lead character who is living on the streets and clearly has a messed up life, and opening scene of the first episode, she spots a woman who looks like she's about to do something crazy. It's at a subway platform. A woman turns around, and they could be identical twins. They are exactly identical. And then, before she can even ask anything, the woman throws herself in front of a train and dies. All right? So, now, this troubled girl has a chance to borrow the other person's identity briefly, thinking she's going to make a lot of money out of this, that this will solve all of her problems. And, of course, she only gets deeper and deeper into the hole as she goes along. If you've heard anything about the show at all, you already know that, spoiler, clones! And so, turns out that there's more than just the two of them. And the mystery deepens with each episode, and so far, I am hooked. I mean, it's only 3 episodes in, so, you know, it could go anywhere from this point. But so far, tightly written, gripping, I'm following along, just hanging on every scene. The gal who plays the clones, the main characters, she is really talented. I mean, you have to pick somebody who can, you know, slip on, you know, new accents at a whim, depending on, you know, there's a clone from Germany, there's a clone from England, she has to be able to slip on these accents and not just the voices, but really inhabit each of these characters. I mean, anyway, you'll have to watch it. You really should watch it. If you haven't been watching Orphan Black, you need to. I highly recommend it. But the other thing that I've been watching on, let's test them out. Ready? Ready? The other thing I've been watching on my Roku! Yeah, see, you give them food, they don't care. All right. Is, this one is actually, you can get it on adultswim.com or you can get it on, YouTube. It is Rick and Morty. Have you been watching Rick and Morty? Oh my God. I love Rick and Morty. I started, I was vaguely interested when I first saw the ads for it. It looked weird. It looked offbeat, but you know, Adult Swim is just, as much as some people love Adult Swim cartoons, there are some of them that I just can't. I've never been able to watch Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I get it. I've seen some of it. I just don't enjoy it. I've never been able to sit through Squidbillies. I've watched two episodes of Metalocalypse and don't. You know, it just none of it really sinks in for me. So it is with some trepidation that I see the ads for Rick and Morty, and I think, oh, well, that looks interesting. It's got potential. I'll give it a shot. With all of these cartoons, I always give them a shot. And after the first couple episodes I saw, I was like, this is really good. It's just, it's clever. It's really, for being some fairly sick, gross-out humor at times, every alien beast that is supposed to be scary looks like it has huge testicles hanging off it somewhere. This is just an artistic theme they've got going. But it's also smartly written. The plot lines are clever. The dialogue is clever. And it's really, really fun. And so I enjoyed the first couple episodes, but I didn't really seek out the rest of them because, you know, I just watch them whenever they come on Cartoon Network. And so I wind up not seeing most of them. And then, if you're not aware, I am completely addicted to Harmontown, the Harmontown podcast, Dan Harmon. I love Harmontown. My brother turned me onto this, and Harmontown is a great podcast. He performs it every week in front of a live audience, who actually pay money to come see his show. And Dan Harmon and, his buddy Jeff Davis and, Dan's girlfriend and other people show up every week. They put on this show, and it's just them talking. It's just them hanging out and spitting crap out, and whatever happens, happens. And it involves a lot of freestyle rap on Dan's part, and they play D&D every week, which is phenomenal. You have to listen to play D&D, and I highly recommend. If you're going to take my advice and go listen to Harmontown, start from the beginning and just wait. You will be thoroughly entertained from day one. I guarantee it. And then by the time you get to, there's some lame episodes in there, stuff where things get a little weird or painful or but even when that happens, you've now invested enough that, you know what, just get through that. It's all right. It's cool. We're good with that one because, yeah, I mean, we're talking two episodes that I've not liked out of the 40 I've listened to. That's right. In a week and a half, I've listened to 40 episodes of Harmontown because I can't stop listening. And anyway, the whole point is I'm listening to Harmontown and he makes some comment about he's supposed to be writing, this is all a couple of years ago, he's supposed to be writing a script for a pilot for Fox, he's supposed to be writing a script for a pilot for CBS, he hasn't done either one of them, he's busy being on tour and alcoholic, and he's, you know, people are giving him, you know, crap about all of this, and he says, not to worry, even if all that falls through, he says, I've already got this thing in the works for Cartoon Network that's brilliant, and I love it, and it's going to be great. I'm like, what the hell is he doing for Cartoon Network? I wasn't putting two and two together yet. And so I go look it up. I'm like, oh, my God, Dan's partly responsible for Rick and Morty? That really? Oh, that makes it even better. I love Dan Harmon. And if you don't know who Dan Harmon is, he was the creator of Community. That's his the big thing that made him famous, and I love Community as well. But he's just a really, really entertaining dude. So now that I realize that Dan is part of what's behind Rick and Morty, suddenly I'm even more interested. So I go back, and I find the episodes online. I watch them through my Roku, and I've now seen they've only aired 9 episodes so far. I've watched all 9 of them, and they're brilliant. They're funny. And again, I also, it's not really necessary with Rick and Morty. I mean, I kind of, the first two that I saw were not the original episodes. It's not like I was watching episodes 1 and 2. I just caught whichever ones happened to be there. Rick and Morty is one that if you can, watch it online, watch it beginning to end, because it's not like you need the continuity, but there's a couple of continuity things in there that are actually kind of cool if you catch them in order, and it's worth your time. I was going to tell you one of my favorite episodes. There's one episode that the end of it, And despite the fact that the whole thing is just goofy and off the wall and really bizarre, this show is, there's one of the episodes that ends on this really powerful note. This really, I mean, if you're watching it and, you know, this is like episode 5 or 6 and you've watched enough to give a crap about these characters, and you get to the end and you're like, that's profound. That's bizarre. It's worth your time. I mean, right now, like I say, there's only 9 episodes out there, 20 minutes a piece. We're talking 3 hours of your time. You've sat through movies longer than that. Go watch Rick and Morty. I mean, hell, just watch the first 3 episodes. And if you don't want to watch the rest, I don't blame you. That's fine. But if you're like me, you'll get through the first 3 and realize that, nope, I'm finishing this. I mean, like I say, 3 hours. You got 3 hours, right? So, that's my Roku this week is, go watch Orphan Black. On Amazon Prime, and go watch Rick and Morty on either AdultSwim.com or YouTube. You will love them. These are great, great shows. But enough about Roku. I know what's up next. It's my science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something here on my science corner. Oh, that would have been so much smoother if I hadn't tripped over the words. Here's the deal. This one, I almost made it to fingertips because it's kind of a short one. But, you know what? You guys deserve it right here. Boiling water at room temperature. I love doing this. It's fascinating. And you can thrill small children with it easily. And some adults. Talking to Yancey, and Yancey says something about, hey, it says here, if you take a glass of water into outer space, it'll boil before it freezes. How is that possible? Is it the lack of pressure? I'm like, hell yeah, it's the lack of pressure. And I start talking to him about boiling water at room temperature. All you need for this experiment is a clear plastic, so you can see through it, a syringe, but not one of the needle ones, like maybe a baster. Maybe a big baster would work. But the one I always use is the little children's medicine syringes. So you get the little plastic syringes, and you can draw in 5 milliliters of liquid medicine and then, you know, use it to give your baby the medicine. All right? And the whole point is you have to have a nice tip at the end that isn't sharp, so you can just plug it up with your finger. And then it has to have a good seal on the inside of the syringe, and it has to be see-through. And so you take your little plastic syringe and put maybe 0.5 milliliter of water inside there. Just drop a little bit, make sure you turn it over, make sure you get all of the air out. There can be no air inside, just liquid. And then once you've got that, plug the end up, and then just pull the plunger back. And because there's no air in there, when you pull the plunger back to expand the space inside, the only thing that it can do is boil the water to make water vapor to fill up that extra space. It's phenomenal. And it's as simple as that. Like I say, tiny bit of water, make sure there's no air, plug up the end, pull the plunger back, and then sit there and watch the water boil. It is freaky and cool. You will absolutely love it. And it's as easy as that. And if you don't have a little plastic syringe at home, then next time you're at the grocery store, next time you're at the drugstore, just stop over in the pharmacy section, and you can pick them up for under $1. All right? They're dirt cheap. Hell, the pharmacy gives them out for free with baby prescriptions. All right? That's why I have 10 of them in my house. Or at least I used to. The kids haven't been babies for a long time, so they've slowly disappeared, gotten thrown away, whatever. But it's great. And I'm telling you, it is literally the function of boiling for any liquid is a combination of temperature and pressure. So in the absence of all the excess temperature, without plugging in all the heat you usually use to boil stuff, you can achieve the same result just by reducing the pressure. Put that water in a vacuum. Instant boil is really cool. And then you let go of the syringe, boom, stops boiling, all the water contracts back into a single liquid. And that's actually one of the best parts, is when you pull the plunger back and you're sitting there watching it boil, so you can see all this empty space inside the syringe that looks like air, but it's not, because you know it's water vapor. You can prove, well, as much as you're going to prove to the people watching that it's not air. You haven't let any air get in, because when you let go of that syringe, it snaps right back, and boom, there's no air inside. It's all liquid. It's really cool. So try that out. Looking ahead, it's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are so close. You know, this was almost going to be a nerd rage almost. And then the more I looked into it, the more I realized that most of this is actually a cause to celebrate. It's not, you know, the stuff infuriates you, but then it all works out. And let me explain. My third son, Elijah, he is 10 years old. He's going to be 11 soon. And Elijah was at school, and he is wearing a T-shirt that says White and Nerdy on it. It's from a Weird Al Yankovic concert. It was actually his older brother's shirt that we bought years ago when we went to see Weird Al in concert. And so he's wearing his White and Nerdy shirt to school. And he gets a couple of kids who approach him about it and start giving him crap about his shirt. Right? And these are kids that he describes them as, you know, they're the kids who are more into sports. So, okay, a couple of dumb jocks come up to him. And they start saying, well, so you're saying you're a nerd? And he says, yeah. And because, again, Elijah has grown up with absolutely no concept that there's any shame attached to the word nerd. It's beautiful that way. It's really cool. And so they say, so you're saying you're a nerd? And he goes, well, yeah, I am a nerd. Why would you say that? Because I'm a nerd. I like being a nerd. This is the actual conversation they're having, as best as he's reporting it to me. And so they start explaining to him that being a nerd is not something you want to be. And he starts explaining to them in return that no, being a nerd means that you're smart and that you're interested in different stuff. And he starts giving, it's not the perfect definition of nerd I would give, but it was a damn good one. All right. And he's right on the money. He was explaining that, look, I'm proud to be a nerd. There's nothing wrong with this. And so they end this conversation ultimately with them walking away and telling him that he's being dumb and that you're such a noob. And that's how they try and end the conversation, is they're going to insult him by calling him a noob. And thankfully, my son is smart enough to go, but that's not what noob means. Noob means you're new at something. It's short for newbie. And they said, no, it's not. It means you're dumb. And so, yeah, well, all right, fine. Finally, he had to just let it go. And afterwards, we have this whole conversation with him because we're worried that, okay, if people are going to make fun of him for being a nerd, I mean, and granted, it's because he's proudly announcing it on his shirt as he walks around. But, you know, we're concerned for him. No, it doesn't seem to shake him. He's annoyed that someone was picking on him a little bit, but not about the whole nerd thing. I mean, his whole opinion is, well, they're just wrong. I mean, I'm not going to feel bad about that. They're just wrong. And to me, the ultimate triumph on that one is that they wind up trying to make fun of him at the end with noob, with a word that is completely lifted straight out of nerd culture, and yet they don't even know what it means well enough to use it correctly. And he had to correct them on it, and they still wouldn't believe him, of course, but it doesn't matter. It means, yeah, they're idiots, whatever. And so that was where my rage was going to start, because there's some other examples that have come up, and I was going to put in this kind of rage about, you know, pretending to get all worked up about nerd oppression, even though I don't really think there is nerd oppression anymore. It's not like the nerd persecution we had when we were kids. When I was a kid, and it really, nerd was something that universally you did not want to be. And even if you were someone like me who knew in your heart, you knew you were a nerd. You knew for sure you were a nerd. Those were the characters you identified with in TV and movies. You identified with the nerds. And yet, you didn't want anyone to know that. No matter how obvious it may have been, you weren't going to tell anybody you were a nerd. You weren't going to proudly announce you were a nerd. No, you very much, especially junior high school. Oh, I strove to be anything but a nerd. I wanted to be cool, whatever cool was defined as. I wanted to be anything that wasn't a nerd. And so back then, there was a real stigma attached to it, and it was really hard in a lot of ways. And nowadays, not so much. We've got it fairly easy. I mean, especially, certainly if you want to compare us to real oppressed minorities, nerds got it really easy. This is not, I've mentioned this many, many times before on the podcast. We've become very mainstream, blah, blah, blah. And yes, nerd still has some negative connotation to it. And yes, there are still some people out there who don't understand and who will, make fun of you for it, or will, not, I don't know. But to me, it's, you know, is it any worse than the teasing we give to other subcultures? I mean, if you're a NASCAR fan, if you're a redneck, a self-styled redneck, there are people in this country who wear redneck as a badge proudly. And to me, yeah, I have this stereotype that they're a bunch of bozos, and that they, you know, you get the, you have this image of redneck that, to me, that's a negative connotation. I certainly wouldn't want to walk around proudly announcing myself as a redneck, but to them, they've taken on that word that was once an insult, and they've made it an identifier for a culture and a way of life that they are very, very proud of, the exact same way that I have taken the word nerd, along with lots of other people, and used it as something that I'm very proud to be, and that my kids have learned that, yeah, you know what, that this is fine, this is good. So, you know, do we have it any worse off than rednecks or any other subculture that gets picked on? We do this to everybody. Everybody gets, you know, in the stereotypes of the mass media. Happens to everybody. On the other hand, there's this other bit that I wanted to report on that went along with this, and let me just walk through it. I'm not going to give anything away yet. My kids, as I've mentioned before, are heavily involved in speech at school, among other activities. And just this year, the Nebraska School Activities Association, the organization that is in charge of high school sports and high school activities in the state of Nebraska, made an announcement about their new speech guidelines and basically said that they had the right to disqualify any, and I don't remember the exact words, but any speech, any presentation by students that did not, that basically deemed inappropriate by community standards. It was very loosely defined, such that really, at whatever event you're at, if the judges at that event feel like your topic is inappropriate, then they can just disqualify you. Which, knowing many, many, many judges at many speech events, that's problematic for me. I mean, a lot of the judges are college kids. I mean, these are the speech kids from, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. My oldest son is a speech judge this year, and he loves doing it along with several of his friends. But there's also some speech judges who have been doing this for years, that they're parents of speech kids, or maybe they've just, you know, been around that long. But there are some speech judges who are older. And when the kids that I'm familiar with, my kids and their friends, when they have material that is slightly more controversial, you can tell the judges often. You can tell the judges' age just by how they scored. That they'll have something that's a little, like they had one that was zombie-based and really funny, really entertaining, but it's a lot of high-action zombie stuff. And they got really good marks whenever they had young judges, and they got really crappy marks whenever they had old judges, people who just either didn't get the zombie culture or didn't feel that this horror movie stuff was appropriate. It was really, really marked. And so the idea that individual competitions are going to be able to just disqualify someone who's been working on this speech, you know, for the entire speech season and bring it up. And now suddenly they get here and they're told that, oh yeah, no, you can't bring that to districts. Without any firmer guideline than just, ooh, community standards. Yeah, that's not acceptable. That's not, it not work for me. Now, fortunately in practice, it really hasn't stopped anything that I know of. Up until state. And I'll get to that in a second. Now, is it possible that there are some kids who may have wanted to do something more powerful, something, more controversial, and then they shied away from it because they were afraid of getting disqualified for community standards? It's possible that that has happened. But I haven't seen anybody be disqualified, so I don't know how much effect it has really had. But then we get to the state speech competition, and it's just like sports. It's divided up into classes. So you have your Class A schools, your Class B schools. Well, one of the Class C schools, it is Gordon Rushville High School, way out in the far northwest corner of Nebraska. It is like literally 20 miles from South Dakota, hour and a half maybe from Wyoming. It is way out west. And this little school, Class C school, they had the poetry champion for their class. at speech. All right. And this kid's name is where do I have it? Where do I have it? Darn it. I wrote the kid's name down so I don't screw this up, and now I'm screwing it up. Michael Barth. There he is. Michael Barth, high school senior from Gordon Rushville, and he was the poetry champion for Class C1 for the entire state of Nebraska. And so far, no problem. He has what some people might consider a controversial speech. The poems he chose were on some more controversial style material. However, he never got disqualified. He went all the way through and won competitions on the local level. He won districts, and then ultimately he won at state. Nobody said a word. Nobody stopped him. And then it came to the best of the best video presentation. This is where they put together, basically a video of all the winners. And they have each of them come forward, and I believe it's all during a big ceremony, and then they film it, and the video is available. And at the Best of the Best awards ceremony, they have all of the winners, the big winners, come up and perform their speeches. And for Michael Barth, they asked him to not perform one of his poems. They said that he was going to have to change it because it was considered too controversial to be presented. He's a winner. I mean, like, literally, he already went through the competition, and he won, and then they said, yeah, but you can't perform what you won with, because that just, it's not appropriate. And I'll give you some more detail on that in a minute, but first, the poems that he chose were largely about gender identity, all right? And so he chose Swing Set by a woman named Andrea Gibson, and Swing Set is the one that they didn't want him performing in their Best of the Best video. Swing Set is about a kindergarten teacher who is a lesbian, and every year new kids come in, and they don't know, often all the way through the year, they don't know whether or not she's a guy or a girl. And they'll ask her, and it's a sweet poem. If you've read it, the whole point is a lot of them will ask if she's a guy or a girl, and she kind of avoids the question, and ultimately, it turns out that it's not really important. And the kids, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, here's what my mom and dad have been saying, but okay, well, can I have a push on the swing? That's the Swing Set reference. And the whole point is that it really doesn't matter. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to be in a world where that level, that kindergarten level where they can go, oh, okay, whatever, that's fine. Wouldn't it be nice if everyone could feel that way, that you can look and it doesn't have to be that important. You don't have to put labels on everything. That's the whole point of this poem. Okay, and that's the one that they pulled. Now, the other two are Same Love by Macklemore. I don't know if you've heard it. It's actually a rap song. And Macklemore has gotten praise for being a rap artist who is putting out a pro-gay song, because that's not really popular in the hip-hop community. But anyway, if you've heard the song Same Love, that's... He used that as one of his other poems. And then the third one, and this was actually my favorite, is a poem called Manly Man by a man named Bradley Hathaway. And Manly Man, I've seen Bradley perform it on YouTube, and he does it as this slam poem sort of thing, and it's really good. His presentation is spectacular. I considered actually doing it myself, because you know how much I love to hear my own voice and I love to recite stuff like that. And I considered doing that poem myself as the closing bit after the music. And I just can't do it. I can't do it justice. I would not be able to convey the same kind of raw emotion and power that he does. And so therefore I'm not going to try. But just suffice to say that Manly Man is a poem about, you know, because he looks effeminate, people make assumptions about him that, you know, he's small and he's got pretty eyes, and people assume that he's gay or that he's girly and he's trying to assert that, no, I'm a manly man. And then, okay, well, but maybe I'm not. Maybe, you know, but the whole idea that don't go judging me based on how I appear. And this was for Michael Barth, the kid who presented these, made this speech. That was his whole point. In fact, I've got his words right here. This is a direct quote from Michael Barth about this. And actually, I think this is actually from his original speech, because the way they present these, they read the poems and then they make commentary on them. And his point is, he says, quote, "Stereotypes do nothing but discourage individuality and arbitrarily define masculinity and femininity. I am not here to talk about what it means to be gay or what it means to be straight. I'm here to talk about what it means to ignore society's expectations of yourself and be your own individual person. All right? And he end quote. And he goes on to explain that he chose these pieces because they, quote, demonstrate the struggles that both men and women go through on a daily basis when they are being judged for not acting like their gender should act, end quote. And that was his point. And so I'm going to do more quotes here in a second. The director of the Nebraska State Activity Association, the NSAA, Rhonda Blanford Green, she's the director of the association, and her commentary on that is that she, and this is, again, direct quote, quote, "The intent of my decision was not to stifle freedom of speech, but rather to avoid any negative connotations for individuals within this statewide production. The NSAA will continue to advocate for all students and promote equitable opportunities through activity participation." The idea, end quote, the idea that she's saying, oh, we don't want to stifle free speech, but, oh, well, we don't really want to share this because people might get the wrong idea. That's what we don't want to associate negative connotations with any student. But that's what he wanted. That's what he wanted to put out there. And she even made some other stupid comment about how, well, and we would hate for us, you know, for us to put out there, you know, so a student who is pushing an agenda and then having people who watch this video, to think that we are supportive of that particular agenda, which, okay, one, it's not a bad agenda to get behind, but two, okay, then put a damn disclaimer on it. You don't want to push agendas one way or another. That's fine. Everybody in the world has a stinking disclaimer on their stuff that says the opinions contained herein do not reflect blah, 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 blah. This is all crap. It's all bull crap because someone on their board was offended by someone talking about gender and sexuality. That's why they stopped it. All right. And this is where my nerd rage was going to come in. See, you can feel me building up to it already. But you know what happened? All the other nerds did their rage for me. I didn't have to bring out my nerd rage because they already got taken care of. Everybody and their dog got involved. And ultimately, the NSAA backed down. They completely retracted their position. They said, okay, you know what? You're right. We wanted to, you know, we thought we were protecting something here, but, you know, obviously this is all already out. So, you know what? We'll just do it. And they gave in. And we won. That was it. And for me, I think this is the trend I'm seeing. I actually, after seeing, you know, my own kid's experience with his bullies at school, and I shouldn't even say bullies. I don't know if that's bullying. They were just picking on him. Whatever. No big deal. All right. But I had his experience that turned out to be no big deal. He dealt with it, and it was fine. Who cares? All right. And then I had this one, and it turns out that, you know what? Good triumphed over evil, as it were. That yes, there was an injustice going on, but society rose up and said, yeah, you know what? We're not going to tolerate that anymore, even in Nebraska. And okay, so we fixed it. Well, that's awesome. All right. And so I went out actively looking for more cases of nerd oppression to be outraged by, and they all kind of turn out like this. It's all a matter of, you know, some congressman, some guy running for Congress, and he used to be or is still a vampire gamer, maybe even a LARPer, I don't remember, but a vampire gamer. He played vampire, so what? All right? But his opponent gets a hold of that and tries to paint him as a Satanist, and, you know, makes references to the guy's characters and stuff that his characters have said in character, in context, online, and, you know, making quotes by him, attributing stuff that his character said in a game, and trying to paint this as something that he truly believes, and blah, blah, blah. Just outrageous crap. This whole 1980s style anti-Dungeons and Dragons mentality. And you want to get outraged by that until you find out that no. Basically, his campaign came back and said, yeah, what are you, an idiot? Please. And people spoke out on it, and it turned out that he won. The vampire LARPer dude won the seat in Congress, and the other guy got completely shut out because, well, you're being an idiot. Society's just not putting up with that crap anymore like they used to. And that's not universal. I'm sure there's still plenty of people who are getting bullied for being nerds. There are plenty of people who are getting bullied for being different. It happens everywhere. And I say nerds. Nerds especially have it pretty easy. I mean, if you're gay, it's certainly not easy. All right. If you're a real oppressed minority in this country, certainly not easy. And so this stuff happens, but I'm telling you, society is getting better about it, and we're turning around on a lot of things, and I hope it continues to get better in the same fashion. I can only imagine that it will. And I don't even know if this follows naturally from what I just said, but I forgot to include this quote from Michael Barth commenting on the entire controversy after it was over. He said about all of it, quote, "The speech community is made up of the underdogs and the outcasts and the weird people, and I'm one of them. When a message like this has a chance of getting out there and somebody gets in the way of it, the speech community is not going to let it happen." Like, wow, end quote. Wow. That's exactly right. That's exactly what I would have wanted to say if I had been able to think about it a little bit longer. And I mean, again, for him, it was a matter of judging people and gender identity and appearances but in general, it's about the people who are different, about the people who are outcasts and on the fringes. And let me tell you what, the speech community, at least here in Nebraska, I'm not saying that it is completely full of nerds, but we certainly make up a huge portion of the speech community. Michael Barth is exactly correct. That is a large part of who the speech community is. And it is not, in my opinion, not the only place, but it is certainly a great place that if you want to find the cream of the crop of nerd society among our young people, man, take a look at the people who are competing in speech. These are smart kids who are doing good things. And again, there's lots of other areas where you can find smart, talented nerds who are not interested in speech. But I'm telling you, it's a really good community, and I love being part of it. And I'm going to be sad when my kids finally get through that. Maybe by the time my last kid gets through school, maybe I'll have some grandkids on the way that'll take that up for me. How many years is that going to be from now? Noah's going to be done in 10 years. Yeah, I won't have grandkids. Yeah, see, grandkids got to get to be 15. I got at least, 20 years before they start doing that. Hopefully I have 20 years before they start into speech. Oh man. But anyway, I just thought the whole thing was cool. And to add on, because I've gone on this topic for way too long, to add on, in my searches for nerd oppression, I did also find a clip that's making the rounds right now about Will Wheaton. And as much as I want to say that Will Wheaton is overrated, and I feel like, I don't know what irks me about the guy, but everybody I hear talk about him, everybody who knows him personally, everything I see about him, he's really, really cool. And I wanna find reasons to not like him, but I really can't. It's odd. I don't know what my issue is with him. But this one, he was at Comic-Con and he's on a panel, and some little girl in the audience, I didn't see the little girl, so I don't know how old she is, but some little girl asks him, "Were you ever called a nerd in school and how did you deal with it?" And Will's response, go look up the video yourself. I'm not even gonna try and repeat it here. Go look up the video, the Will Wheaton Nerd Comic-Con. You'll find it. It's easy. And his response to her is just wonderful. It is just spectacular. And he talks about not getting upset, not getting angry. He says, it's not about you, because you haven't done anything wrong. That there's nothing wrong with you. It's about them and their insecurities and their issues at home. And really, you should just feel sorry for them more than anything else. And he repeats the line about, it all gets better. And then he ends with, look around. We're at Comic-Con. There's 50,000 people here who've all been through that exact same thing. And you know what? We're doing all right. And I'm like, yeah, we are. So, good on Will Wheaton. I was really impressed by that. I really liked watching that video. And that's it. I wanted to make this a nerd rage, but I don't have anything to be really upset about. We're winning so far this week. Oh, all right. I need a segue so that I can get right to the badass movie quote of the week. Oh, thank goodness. I needed to get out of that mode. This is from the movie The 13th Warrior, my favorite Dungeons & Dragons movie ever, even though it's not officially connected to Dungeons & Dragons at all. You watch this movie and you go, yep, that's exactly how Dungeons & Dragons should run. That's exactly it. And in the movie The 13th Warrior, Ahmed the Arab, played by Antonio Banderas, winds up traveling north and hooks up with a whole bunch of Vikings. And so it is literally, and it might as well have been 13 dwarves plus Bilbo Baggins. It's really that kind of story, that he winds up in this massive group of Vikings, and he's actually the 13th warrior, so it's 12 Vikings in him. But he winds up traveling with these Vikings, and all sorts of awesome, cool swordplay battles happen, and there's scary crap at the end, and it's a fun movie. Just a lot of fun to watch. Stupid movie, fun movie. And there are some interplays in this movie between Antonio Banderas' character, Ahmed, and a guy, a character in the movie, one of the Vikings, named Hergr. Hergr the Joyous, which, by the way, The Joyous is the greatest title you could possibly have. I am thrilled by that. I love it. And Hergr the Joyous is played by some Norwegian actor. Dennis Storhoy is his name, but he's never been anything I've seen because everything else is Norwegian. But the interactions between the two of them in this movie just kill me. The first time, Ahmed, Antonio Banderas, needs a weapon, and so they give him a Viking sword, one of the huge Viking great swords, one of these giant two-handed jobs like your barbarian, your 20-strength barbarian carries in Pathfinder. And they throw him this sword, and he leans over and grabs it, and he says, "I cannot lift this." And Hergr just says, "Grow stronger." I love that. That's the right attitude. And, all right, later, now that he winds up having his giant sword whittled down and refashioned into a scimitar form. And so now the barbarians are all awaiting the oncoming enemy, all right, and they're getting prepared for the battle. And Hergr says, "When they come, we form a circle in the center of the room, backs to one another." And Ahmed says, I am not a warrior. And Hergr just says, "Well, very soon you will be." I also love that. So if you haven't seen 13th Warrior, go watch it. Go watch 13th Warrior. This show is a podcast. Yeah, this podcast is all about the crap that I love, and I love 13th Warrior. Highly recommend. Wait a minute. What comes after the badass movie quote of the week? That's right. It's the Pod-O-Matic! Holy crap. Guys, R2 is broken. Hold on. Hold on. Oh, hey, how about that? R2 has an off switch. Here, we'll try that one. Oh, thank you, R2. You're back. Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. You know what? Let me start over. Holy blueberries! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out and switched on Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And oh my god, did you guys send me Pod-O-Matics? You guys went nuts with this one. I went from what I tell you last week, 140, 150 I had left, 120, I don't remember. I'm at like 300 and something now. You guys nailed it. Now, a large part of it is that Zimny, who is intent on dominating every Pod-O-Matic episode ever, sent me 100, just straight up 100 Pod-O-Matic entries for my birthday because he's sweet like that. So this list is beefed up and filled out and ready to roll. And our first number here from the newly awakened R2 is number 96, which is, hey, 96 is from Talvin. Talvin says, "Name three things you hated about first edition AD&D. So first edition Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Okay. Number one, psionics. I hated psionics. They were stupid and pointless. Psionics were an add-on system that literally you didn't pay anything for them. You rolled up your character. Supposedly, every character you roll up, you make your character, which are supposedly balanced, but they weren't really because this was all first edition, whatever. And you make up your characters, and then you roll on this freaky low percentage chance that, oh, you also might have psionic abilities. Just random chance. And if you do, by the way, they're probably going to be really darn powerful. It was completely unbalancing that you would just, out of nowhere, if you just happened to roll this 2% chance or 3% chance, you would suddenly, as a first level character, have these massive psionic powers, these massive mental abilities that circumvented a lot of your normal defenses, it was stupid. Absolutely idiotic, and it left a bad taste in my mouth, and I've never used psionics ever. I hated that system, and even though I know now they've actually added psionics as classes, and therefore, you know, you can create a psionic-based character that is actually balanced against all of the others, I don't care. I don't like psionics. I don't think they fit. We already have magic. Why do you need another system that replicates what we already have and just call it mental powers instead of magic? That's stupid. But I also, from first edition AD&D, I hated, and I've told you this before, hated the stupid weapons versus armor chart. That they had a giant chart, and on this chart was every single weapon running down the side versus every single armor across the top. So if I have a spear, and I have a spear versus plate armor, oh, in addition to whatever my normal bonuses are, I get an additional -2 because spears aren't effective against plate armor, or whatever. Actually, spears probably would be. That's not the point. It was every single weapon had its own individual modifier versus plate armor or banded mail or splint mail it was tedious and stupid. I mean, even if you bothered to write down on your character sheet and have, okay, I'm carrying my glaive and here's my bonus with it, here's my damage, and you didn't even have a bonus because you had to look that up on another chart to see what your to hit chance was. And then you actually wrote down all of the armor and modifiers, you just wrote them all across your page, it would still be every single time you hit, you would have to compare it versus whatever armor they're wearing. And, oh yeah, it only applies to armor being worn by human beings, or other demi-humans, whatever. It doesn't apply to, well, okay, but how is it effective against scales versus the ogre that just has a really tough hide or versus, they didn't take any of that into account. It was pointless. Pointless and needlessly complicated and stupid. Is that two? There's so many. The third, ability modifiers, especially percentile strength. Percentile strength was infuriating. All right. Here's the deal. Nowadays, if you play Pathfinder or Dungeons & Dragons 3rd edition, I assume 4th is the same, I have no idea. You start off with 10 or 11 is your average ability. Anything above that, every point or two, you get another +1. So, you know, you got strength of 12, you get +1. Strength of 14, you get +2. Strength of 16, you get +3, etc. And it makes a lot of sense. It's a nice incremental system, and you get, you know, a nice range of scores and modifiers. In first edition AD&D, those bonuses were just completely nonsensical. All right. For example, and each one had their own separate chart. So, for example, dexterity. If you had a dexterity between, like, I don't know, it was like from 7 to 14, then you had no bonus. There was no modifier for having an armor class between 7 and 14. They were all functionally identical. So you could have a nice dexterity score, and it didn't do you crap. Unless you were a thief, and then you could use it to get bonuses on some of your thieving abilities, whatever. But if you weren't a thief, having a 14 was no better than having an 8, so why bother? All right, until you got to 15, and then 15 gives you a +1 armor class, 16 gives you a +2, 17 gives you a +3. Each ability was like that each one gave different percentages or straight bonuses or whatever to different abilities, but they were not in any sensical order. There was no consistency between one ability and the next. The bonuses that you got to spells or whatever else for intelligence had no bearing or comparison to the bonuses you got to thief abilities and armor class for dexterity, which also had no bearing on what you did for strength. They were all completely unrelated. It all required millions of charts, needlessly complicated, and strength, they realized when they first designed it that, okay, well, I get a bonus, I don't think your bonuses for strength, the damage bonuses and stuff, I don't think those started until like 17. Literally, I think they didn't start until 17. Like, you got a +1 for 17, a +2 for 18, but oh, you know what, that's not enough. So now you have a percentile system. So if you actually have an 18 strength, well, then you could have an 18.05. Or an 1821, or an 1883, all the way up to 1800 was the ultimate strength. And so then, that way, they could stretch out the 18 to give you more bonuses in there. Stupid! No other ability needed a percentile score anywhere to cause any difference, all right? But somehow strength, because this game is so focused on combat and so focused on physical strength, that physical strength needs that 18 to 19 stretch where it's incremented out to 100. And you go from a plus 2 to like a plus 5 or plus 6 over the course of your percentile strength. But then, by the way, once they expanded the rules, oh, but then right after 18-0-0, you just go straight to 19. And it just goes out from there, 19, 20, 21. The only percentile increment added anywhere was just for strength between 18 and 19. Stupid. Okay, those are the three things I hated most about AD&D. I could probably go on, but we've done enough, right? R2? Did you guys hear that? Can you hear that? R2 has never made that noise before. That is, oh my god, the on-off switch actually has two different directions. I have never played with this switch before in my life. Apparently this side makes different noises. Okay, I'm not going to mess with that. Oh, except I just flipped it over and I ruined the number. Damn it. Okay, here, hold on, let's try again. See? I've never heard that before. But, sorry, R2. The number he gave me was 95, which, oh, right next to the other one. 95 says, oh, it's from Zimny, and Zimny says, the skies have gone permanently dark, and the reptoids from beneath the Earth's surface have come up to claim dominance. How will you make sure that your family survives? By selling out to the reptoids? We will flee out to my in-laws' place and make sure we're the first ones there, and then we'll lock the fences and gates, and we'll hole up where they have a number of guns and a fruit cellar that is full of food. They have a freezer that is fully stockpiled, and they have a cellar that has canned goods to last us a year. So that would be the first thing we do, is hole up out there. And then once we know that we've got that place secure and safe, we leave someone to guard it, we run into town, and see what we can do to stockpile even further. They have a well out there, the water's not as huge an issue. And they've got some animals. They've got cows out there. Hell, we got cows. We're doing pretty good for the setup there. It's just a matter of protecting the... protecting the perimeter, because really, it's mostly just really crappy barbed wire fences. It's not like people can't just come crossing into this acreage out of nowhere. Then once we're sure we've got our fallback position and we're safe and we're as stockpiled as we're going to get, then we work on going and kissing up to the reptoids and see if we can't ingratiate ourselves with the winning side and serving our new dark overlords. I'm good with that. Oh, I love these new noises, R2. Number two, all the way back to the top. Kyle says, I don't have dreams about having affairs on my wife. I have dreams about having sex with other women, but it always has an explanation for why I'm not married. Either I'm divorced, a widower, or I'm at an age before I got married. Is that weird? Oh, God, no, it's not weird. You have been married long enough, like I have, that your moral code against cheating on your wife is so strong that it pervades your dreams and that you can't do anything about it. And so therefore, lucky you, your mind has worked out a way to circumvent that, that you can, in your dreams, you already have a premise built in that convinces you that you're not married anymore, and it allows you to have that freedom in your dreams to do whatever you're going to do. I, on the other hand, if I have a dream about other women, either they wind up being my wife, in which case it's okay, or in the dream, this has happened to me numerous times. In the dream, there'll be someone, and it'll be like I'm in college again or something like that. I'm in a situation where the cute girl and we're flirting and we're getting to know each other and there's obviously this mutual attraction and maybe there's some hand holding. And then you'll get to the point where we kiss. In the dream, we kiss for the first time, and then I will every time. I will push her away and say, I'm sorry. I'm really flattered and I find you really, really attractive, but I can't do this. I'm married. I have a wife and I can't do this. And then I walk away from her. And then I wake up. Oh, every time I wake up, I'm like, oh, it was just a dream. I could have done whatever I wanted. I can't. Oh, how disappointing. It's as if I had a dream where I could fly, because I love dreams where I can fly. You have a dream where you can fly, and you are off, and having a great time, and then just after you take off, you're like, I can fly, and then you go, oh, wait, you know what? Shoot. Physics wouldn't like this. Just put me down. I'll be fine. Just now put me down. I get, you know what? There's a bicycle there. I'll be okay with that. No, I'm good. Really. It's fine. In your dreams, you're free to do anything. It's a little disappointing, but not at all weird. Oh God, that's awesome. Number 75. This one's from Akiva. Awesome. Akiva says, what's the dumbest thing you've ever had to go to the emergency room for? I have a tie. Both for my kids. I can't remember stupid stuff I've gone to the emergency room for because I rarely go to the emergency room. I can't think of the last time. Well, okay, I did go. I myself went to the emergency room for heartburn one time. I had, it was when I was about 30 pounds heavier than I am now, and I'm already pretty fat as it is. But I was big enough that I was having daily heartburn. And I did not realize that after a while, if you have chronic heartburn, it can often just turn into straight up chest pain. Like, I don't know what it is, how it settles out, but it's some referred pain that, I mean, literally left side of my chest, right where I imagine that my heart is, and it is just a solid aching pain right underneath the surface that I would swear I was having a heart attack. All right. And does it go a little bit down my arm on that side? Maybe so. I can't tell. And it doesn't go away. It just does not go away. And so I panicked and I went to the emergency room. And so I don't even think that's a stupid reason for going to the emergency room, because I got there and they put me on the test machine. I ran the treadmill and they went through every test that they could do and they got all done and they said, no, your heart's really healthy. You're in great shape. You're fine. They said, we don't know what the pain is, but here's some things it might be. And so they sent me to a specialist. And ultimately the specialist said, yeah, dude, it's chronic heartburn. It's acid reflux. This is what happens. And it feels like a heart attack, but it's not. And so sure enough, they put me on some Nexium, which is the equivalent of Prilosec, I think, which you can get over the counter now. But he put me on Nexium, and within 48 hours, pain completely gone. And as long as I remained on the Nexium, never hurt again. Nexium is just for treating acid reflux. That's it. And the pain went away. And then if something happened and I stopped taking my Nexium for a few days, yep, hey, look, it feels like I'm having a heart attack. It's stupid. Stupid. I can't believe that. But that's what happened. And that, I don't necessarily think that's a dumb reason for going to the emergency room. But we did take my son Elijah went to the emergency room for a fart, which is a bit from a stand-up routine also. I can't remember which stand-up did it, but he talks about that, going to the emergency room and then just you fart and, oh, look, the pain went away. That's what happened to Eli. We were convinced it was going to be his appendix because it was hurting and it wouldn't move. The pain never moved. It stayed solid. It was right there where his appendix was. We had him try and go to the bathroom. We had him do this and that. We gave him some medicine for it. And after enough hours, the pain is not going away. We're like, okay, we've got to go in. And we got to the emergency room. They check him out. He's laying on the bed. They're like, okay, well, they did all their stuff. The doctor will be in just a little bit. And quite literally, 5 minutes before the doctor shows up, Eli just farts. Huge fart. And we're like, dude, was that it? Did you just have, is your pain gone now? And he's like, yeah, it feels better now. Sure enough, doctor checked him out. That was it. We had to pay emergency room fees for a fart. And we've also been to the emergency room for stuff shoved up to the nose. It was a bead, I think, that one of them shoved up their nose and we couldn't get it out. Had to go to the emergency room because we went to the doctor. Doctor couldn't get it out, so he sent us over to the hospital and we eventually had an ENT come in and they actually had to anesthetize the kid and take the thing out of his nose. That's pretty stupid too. But I don't think that was an emergency room visit. I think that was just we went to the doctor and then the doctor referred us over to the hospital. I think that's what happened with that one. Excellent. Number 81. This one is from Zimny. Of course it's from Zimny. A vaporous red entity keeps haunting your bathroom between 7:30 p.m. and 11:02 p.m. How do you deal with it? Ooh. Fortunately, I don't shower during that time. And if I can plan accordingly, I can probably avoid using the restroom during that time. I think I'm okay with that. But ultimately, a vaporous red entity haunting my bathroom? The smart move is move out. We need to move out and get a new house and get away from it and forget about it. That's it. You know what? Every horror movie with a haunted house in it, the family moves to a new place and they've got a ghost, they've got strange occurrences. Every single one of those movies, every single one. It's always the wife who says, I don't like this. Something weird is going on here every time. And every time it's the husband who says, oh, you know what? It's just an old house. These things happen. What do you want us to do? You want us to move? We can't afford that. And in every single one of those movies, if they had just moved the hell out, the first time the wife says, I don't like it here. This is wrong. If they'd just gotten out, problem solved. That no one would have had to die. No one would have had to get tortured. No children getting sucked into the television set and having to run towards the light. None of that. We could have just been done. Although in that movie, they didn't really complain so much as they were actually having a good time with the poltergeist for a while. But either way, get out. What are you, stupid? Okay, so that's what I would do. I would leave. 73. Thank you, R2. And this one is also from Zimny. If you suddenly got transformed into a famous movie monster for a weekend, what monster would you like to be? I would probably go Dracula. I would do vampire. It's just for a weekend, so I can control my appetite for a weekend. I don't have to kill anybody. And then you get lots of really cool powers. I mean, you can fly, you can change into a bat, you can hypnotize people. I wouldn't be able to go outside during the day. It would kind of screw that part of the weekend up, but, you know, I could deal with that. I'm all right with that one. Maybe werewolf. Maybe Godzilla. I don't really want to be Godzilla. I don't have any urge to spend an entire weekend stomping around Tokyo and swatting away planes. They would probably find a way to kill me before the weekend was out. So I'm gonna go with vampire for now. There's probably better answers, but I'm gonna go vampire. Number 17 from Akiva again. I'm amazed because Akiva's only got like 5 entries on this list. I can't believe he's come up twice. You mentioned the worst concert you've been to. I did just recently. What's the best you've been to? Where every band was at least good, if not great. Okay, the very best concert I've ever been to, hands down, Weird Al Yankovic. And I don't care if you think that's a silly answer. I don't care if you think he's a silly performer, because he is a silly performer. That's his whole point. Weird Al Yankovic puts on a show. Beginning to end, this man entertains you non-friggin-stop. It is crazy how entertaining this show is. And an all-ages show. It's really amazing. We saw Weird Al up at Sioux City, and we took the two older boys with us. This was a few years ago that it happened. And all of us loved it. We loved every second of it. The man does costume changes every 2 or 3 songs. He's wearing the giant fat suit. He comes out doing his everything. Everything. And he just is just nonstop fun. Best concert ever, without question. Now, having said that, you also heard my fingertips episode on Real Big Fish. That was a good concert. That was a lot of fun, too. Was it the second best concert I've ever been to? It might be. It might be. I mentioned Huey Lewis was really good. And that was back in the 80s when Huey Lewis was big and supposed to be good. The first time I saw They Might Be Giants in concert, oh, I was just blown away. That was a great time. But Weird Al, hands down, the best concert ever. I paused there as if that's where I'm just going to end the podcast. But R2 has rolled me up a 71 from Direcat. Direcat, would you rather be a paraplegic ninja or be constantly disoriented? Well, you know, being a paraplegic ninja would not be that much different than being a paraplegic me, really. Or constantly disoriented. It depends on what you mean by disoriented. I don't think I'd like being constantly disoriented. Impairing my mental faculties would bother me. And you know what? Now that I think of it, paraplegic ninja, I'm going to choose to go with the, ninja competition versions of ninja. You've seen the Ultimate Ninja stuff. These guys, okay, paraplegic, let's say, paraplegic, two limbs, I'm going to assume you mean from the waist down. I can't use my legs. Have you seen the upper body strength on these dudes? Oh, yeah, that'll make up for a lot. Okay, the wheelchair's going to be inconvenient, but at least I have all my faculties. And look at these guns. These arms are huge. Yeah, no, I'll go paraplegic ninja every time. I've decided. Last one? Nah, you know what? Maybe not. We'll see. Hold on. Yeah, a little over an hour. This one's number 37 from Jeff Hawes. Jeff Hawes says... hold on. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. That phone call means there's an emergency at work, which means I got to get back up there, and I would love to finish this up with you guys and tell you what it was that Jeff Hawes said, but you're just going to have to wait. So, hey, you know what? Let's do a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was She Blinded Me With Science as performed by William Shatner. Songs on this podcast are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in my podcast if I didn't love them myself. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes and write me a nice review, or check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page and click like. It is just 9 seconds out of your day. You can do that for a friend, right? Don't forget to check out the free games that I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you, but to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together, and we'll have fun! God, can you believe I didn't stumble over that? That was great!
I don't want my long hair and pretty green eyes with no, I do not have a mascara, eyelashes, skinny figure, undersized t-shirt, hip, shake a little too much when I walk, confuse anyone. I am a manly man. Within this sissy frame, obviously rib lad and chest lies a heart that beats to the drum of a Native American ritual dancing wildness. It pumps. An ever-cascading supply of untamedness that a herd of wild mustangs have yet to grasp. If danger lurks about, I will seek it out. If adventure abounds there, I will be found. If the damsel be in distress, I will show her who is best. I am a manly man, because I don't flush and I leave the lid up. I drive a 1988 Ford pickup truck. Girls don't break up with me. I break up with them first. Except the last time. It didn't really work out like that. I don't shave the hair on my face. Because there isn't any. I can't grow any. But when I can, I won't shave. Because beards are tough. I fart, burp, and spit when I want, not caring who's nearby. Disrespect my mama, and I will punch you in the eye. Because I am a manly man. Or am I? I tell my guy friends that I love them, and then sometimes I even hug them. No, I'm not gay. I just love them. And when I watched Bambi, I cried. And when my meemaw gets mad, I still run and hide like David. I want to be a man after God's own heart. I'm not there yet, but I'm past the start. And when people talk, I try to listen, a spirit of compassion. That's my vision. Surely I am a manly man. I want to be loved and have love and give love, and not just that romantic kind either. Although I am looking for that beauty. Not helpless, but wants to be rescued. The damsel in distress, man, woman, myth, true. I will fight for her, climb the highest tower for her, and love her, and share with her, and delight in her, and be her warrior, her protector. She will be my crown, and I will be hers. My masculinity will be passed down and affirmed to my sons, and each of my daughters will know they are lovely and deserving of authentic romance. Society tells me all day long that I've defined manhood completely wrong, but you ask any honest man and he will agree. You ask any honest woman and she too will see that I am a manly man.